Hello, welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya, where today we're talking books. On the show, we have a 21st century retelling of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. We'll discuss the dark underbelly of the 20th century British Raj in a new crime thriller set in Calcutta. And we'll discover the devastating memoir of a British journalist about the sudden death of her partner. And to guide us through all three is Sarah Shaffy, online editor and producer at The Bookseller. All that ahead on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Deka Aitkenhead is an award-winning journalist known for her interviews with leading politicians and her work at The Guardian. However, in her new book, All at Sea, she uses her journalistic prowess to tell the tragic story of suddenly losing her partner of 10 years and father to her two young children when he drowned trying to rescue his son in a Jamaican bay. Sarah Shaffy, welcome to the show. This must have been a really difficult book for Aitkenhead to write. How does she approach the task?
It is a really difficult subject matter, and this is something I remember reading about when it happened in the news. Obviously, she's a journalist and found herself becoming the news story when this tragedy happened. And I expected the book to be very upsetting to read, but actually she approaches it from the point of view that it's a book about memories and her memories of Tony, her partner, and their love, the way they got together, their family. So it's actually quite a hopeful book. And I think she approaches it from that point of view that if she writes everything down, she will remember it and that love for Tony will continue.
That's interesting. I mean, because it must have been quite raw still. He died in 2014, so it's not that long ago. So she manages to make it kind of a hopeful story in the end.
Yeah, and you do feel that rawness. It's still very new. Her children are very young, so I think maybe it was important for her to get down on paper all her memories about their father so they can have this as a resource as well to remember him by. I think it is partially a book about how we grieve. So still being in the grieving process, I think, helps with that. But it's also a book that acknowledges everybody grieves in different ways. And Deka and Tony were from very different backgrounds. You know, she was fairly privileged, white, middle class. And he, when she met him, was a black drug dealer in inner city London. So their crowds of friends were very different. And there are descriptions in the book of how Tony's death affects different people in different ways and kind of that not quite matching of cultures.
Do you think it becomes a bit of a handbook for anyone who's going through grief? Do you think this is kind of, would this be useful to someone, say, who is in a similar situation?
I think that's really difficult to say. I think it's an intensely personal story. It does have universal themes in it. I don't think it's a handbook necessarily, but I think it's a really interesting book to read if you are grieving, if you have lost someone. Although saying that, we talked about the rawness, and I think it is a painful read. I mean, I've never lost anyone in the way that Deka has lost someone, and I still found it very painful at times.
And the story is told, it's told by Aitkenhead, but it's kind of two perspectives. So it's her inner thoughts on the one hand and her kind of journalistic mind on the other hand. How does that device work? I mean, do you think it works? And I guess what do those two voices provide?
I think it definitely works. It opens with a retelling of the day that Tony died. And it's written in a very journalistic style. It is very much a story. Before then, we're kind of brought back into the present and taken back into the past to learn how she met Tony. And I think Deka is a journalist. She knows how to tell a story. She knows the devices to use. And that really comes across, but it flows so well. And I think you kind of get everything you need from it.
And in terms of chronology, do we kind of start at the beginning and work forwards, or does she always come back to her kind of her present state, you know, without him, essentially?
She does come back to the present state. I mean, like I say, we kind of hop around a bit. We go back to Jamaica sort of in the middle of the book and then come back out. You know, the funeral is discussed quite late in the book, but it always comes back to Deka in the present and Deka's children in the present.
All at Sea by Deka Aitkenhead is out now, published by Fourth Estate. Our second book today is a retelling of Jane Austen's classic Pride and Prejudice. This is part of a series of books where contemporary writers have taken on the works of Austen, and this one sees American writer Curtis Sittenfeld rise to the challenge. The book, which is called Eligible, brings the tale up to date and relocates it in the Cincinnati suburbs. Sarah, it's always dangerous territory trying to rewrite a classic like this. What do you think the secret is to getting it right?
I think, first of all, you need to find a really good writer, which Curtis Sittenfeld is. And I think the second thing is that the writer needs to acknowledge what's come before, but make it different enough that an audience will enjoy it and not just think it's a complete mimicking of Jane Austen's work.
I think, yeah, it's important to have kind of radical differences to really stamp your authority on it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, one thing about Eligible, which is named after the reality show in the book that Chip Bingley goes on, which is obviously bringing it bang up to date, is that the tone is still there from Austen. It's kind of that fun, slightly quirky, very self-aware kind of tone. And it is a really fun read, which I think is what really struck me.
So how does she set up the storyline? I mean, how are Lizzie and Mr. Darcy and all the rest of them portrayed in the 21st century?
So in the 21st century, everyone's got very 21st century jobs. So Lizzie is a journalist and Jane is a yoga teacher. But it's interesting to see the way that Sittenfeld translates the kind of, let's say, the status symbols and those kinds of things into the 21st century. So obviously Darcy is now no longer a landowner. He's a neurosurgeon, which is kind of one of the highest, you know, thought of jobs in modern society. And Cousin Willie works in the tech industry. So there's lots going on. There's lots to take in. And I think it really works for some of the characters, bringing them bang up to date.
I mean, it's interesting because obviously one of the themes throughout Austen's work is the idea of the kind of English class system, which is so kind of, yeah, so English in a way and so connected to the 19th century. How do you do that when you translate it to the 21st century and we're in the States? Does class become money, or is it something more complicated than that?
I think it's really interesting putting it into an American society, because I don't think America necessarily has a class system in the way that Britain used to have and still does in some cases. And I think jobs are a big way that Sittenfeld kind of differentiates between the different types of people. Like I say, Darcy's a neurosurgeon and he looks down on everyone else. He's got the healthy ego of somebody who holds people's lives in their hands on a day-to-day basis.
It's interesting. I mean, it's almost like education is the new kind of class, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think you have to do quite a lot of education to be a neurosurgeon, but I could be wrong.
I would assume so.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah, Austen's work isn't the only thing that's being retold at the moment. Shakespeare is kind of being retold seemingly every other week. Why do you think there is this trend to kind of tackle the classics and resituate them like this?
I think the classics are classics for a reason. They're all really good stories, well told. And I think people love a good story. And if a writer can tackle that and make it successful, people are going to really enjoy that. I mean, with something like Pride and Prejudice, how many film adaptations have there been? How many TV adaptations have there been? And I, for one, have probably watched them all, because the story is just brilliant and I think strikes a chord with all of us.
You mentioned Curtis Sittenfeld. Obviously, you know her work. Can you tell us a little bit about her? Because a lot of people may not have heard of her name before.
Yeah, she's an American writer. She's written a few different things. I'm a big fan of a book she wrote called Prep, which is set in a prep school and very much looks at, again, I guess, that focus on education and on class in that book, which translates through to her retelling of Pride and Prejudice.
Eligible by Curtis Sittenfeld is out now, published by Random House. Our final book today is A Rising Man by Scottish Indian writer Abir Mukherjee. Set in 1919 Calcutta, it follows a former Scotland Yard detective, Sam Wyndham, who leads an investigation into the death of a senior official that takes him into the murky depths of the British Raj. Sarah, this is Mukherjee's debut novel. What did you make of it?
I absolutely love this. I think we're all so obsessed with psychological thrillers at the moment. We can't get enough of things like Gone Girl and The Girl on the Train, which are all fabulous. But this was a good old-fashioned whodunit crime novel. And I thought it was brilliant because it was very layered. Obviously, it's set in Calcutta during the time of the Raj, like you said. And so you've got this political situation going on at the same time as Sam is trying to solve a murder and then also a train robbery.
And how much does that political sort of context come into it? Is there a sort of political message here, do you think, or is it very much in the background?
Oh, no, absolutely. Sam is a new transplant in Calcutta, and he is, I guess, the conscience of the book. He looks at his white colleagues who have been living the high life, and then he looks at he's got, I guess you'd call him his sidekick, who is a very intelligent Indian police officer who probably does a better job than most of the British police officers on the force, but because of the fact that he's Indian, he does not hold the same status as them. And Sam, you know, constantly comments internally on some of the situations he sees. So we do really feel the sense that the Raj was not a good thing.
Tell us a little bit about the author as well. I mean, he won a competition to write this book, but his background is actually in finance.
Yeah, which I don't think you would notice if you read this book. I mean,
it's not full of finance metaphors.
No, okay. It's not full of finance metaphors, thank goodness. And I think he's a very accomplished writer. This is the first book in a series, and I think he will become better and better. But he's already a very engaging writer.
What is the style, his style, do you think? Is it very literary or is it quite fast-paced? I mean, how do you describe it?
Yeah, I think he's a good commercial writer, but I think those layers that he puts in the book really make it kind of lift it, if you will. And I look forward to seeing kind of what he's going to do next.
Do we know where this series is going to go next, or is it
No, I don't, but I assume there'll be another murder in the next book.
Okay, fantastic. A Rising Man by Abhir Mukherjee is out on May the 5th, published by Harville Secker. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Sarah Shafi. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow, where we'll be going over this week's film releases with David Jenkins from Little White Lies magazine. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for tuning in.